The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
The Incomparable, number 669, June 2023.
Welcome back, everybody, to The Incomparable. I am your host, Jason Snell. This is another episode of our book club where we are reading a lot of books that are nominated for awards. We are getting to the end of our Nebula Award nominees this time. We read two books. We read T. Kingfisher's Nettle and Bone, and we read Travis Baldry's Legends and Lattes. That's right. Ampersand Fest 2023 is here. Joining me to talk about books with ampersands in their titles are the following wonderful members of the book club. Book club regular Aline Sims is here. Hello.
I should have put on my ampersand necklace. I don't know what I was thinking. Hi.
Hi. I have a little ampersand that my old boss got me that is just like a little, like it's like 4 inches high. It's like a little sculpture of an ampersand, because she knows this is back at Mac User, I was always like, I know we could say and, but why not an ampersand?
They're just cool.
It's like, oh, they're you and your ampersand
pieces of punctuation.
We're all about the ampersands here. Another regular at the book club, Erica Ensign, is here. I guess we had Aline Sims ampersand Erica Ensign. Hello.
Yes. I, too, love ampersands. In fact, once in a parking lot, I found a little black plastic ampersand, like the kind that you might put on it's like an inch tall, like that you might like slide into one of those slidey signs that you change the letters on.
Right.
But it was three dimensional. It wasn't just like completely flat. And like, I usually don't pick things up in parking lots, but it was an ampersand. So I took it home and I washed it, and it's still in Mona, my bag somewhere, because nice. I love ampersands.
Love it. Love it. Ampersand Scott McNulty is here. Hello.
Greetings and salutations. That was an ampersand.
Greetings, ampersand, salutations. Mm-hmm. I appreciate it. Mm-hmm. In HTML, it would be ampersand, AMP, semicolon, because I always loved the fact that you had to use an ampersand to explain that you were about to use an ampersand in HTML. Very funny. And a not regular member of our book club, but she was like, I read these books. I want to be on the book club. It's Kelly Gamont. Hello.
Hello. Ampersand. I am glad to be here, and I'm team ampersand because I just think it sort of looks a little fancier when you come across that kind of punctuation in something. So yeah.
Starting your statement with an ampersand and then continuing as you did, I feel like if somebody transcribed what you just said, it would be a really good like Fiona Apple album title, something like that. Long and starts with an ampersand. I don't know. I'm just riffing here. Anyway, these books were both nominated for the Nebula Award. And since the Hugo Awards, as we record this, haven't come out yet, the nominees, mm-hmm. we're just breaking our way through the Nebulas, Science Fiction Fantasy Writers Association. And we should probably start, let's see. Let's start with Nettle and Bone by T. Kingfisher. I just finished this yesterday because I realized 2 days ago that we were doing a podcast, and there's another book that I was reading that took forever to get through. And then I got to this book. I'm like, oh my God, I have 3 days to read it. Good news, everybody. Both of these books, by the way, I don't know if it's the ampersand. I don't know if it's
makes it faster.
It makes it faster. Makes it go down easy. But both of these books, fast reads, kind of very pleasant. This is a story about a third daughter, Mara, who is a princess. And as of the third daughter, she watches as her sister goes off, her oldest sister goes off. She's being married to the king of a powerful kingdom, the Northern Kingdom. And She's supposed to give him babies, and there's all like political reasons why this is the case. Anyway, she dies. And so they send her next sister to have babies for the king of the Northern Kingdom. And what they do is they send Mara to a convent to set, not as a nun, really, but more as a, we're going to put you someplace where you'll just be on ice in case we need another wife for the king of the Northern Kingdom. A place where you will be, you know, on your own and not like having babies and with other people, which is not true because, I mean, she doesn't have a baby, but she totally has like sex with a guy when she's there. So the convent strategy is poor, is what I'm saying. But anyway, so she's in the convent. And then she decides that she's going to save her sister, who is being treated terribly by the king, and embarks on a quest that involves her crossing a desert and visiting a dust, what a
dust wife,
dust wife. Mm-hmm. Who is like a graveyard witch, and
Keeper.
And saying, I want to kill the king. And the graveyard witch is like, I'm going to give you a test. And she passes the test and she's like, all right, let's go kill a king. And they pick some people up along the way and on their mission to kill the king of the Northern Kingdom. But it's not as easy as all that. And it's a little more complicated. And there's a lot more detail. And that is the story of Nettle and Bone, which, again, 245 pages. Fun, fast, goes some places that I didn't expect. I liked it. I would love to know what everybody else thought about it. Lauren asked me about it today. She's like, so yeah, I guess you finished your book, right? Because I finished it last night because the podcast is today. And I said, yeah, it's nice. It's nice. I didn't have one of those like raves about like, oh my God, it's so great. I'm like, no, I liked it. It was really good. How did everybody else feel about Nettle and Ampersand Bode?
I also quite liked it. I had a little trouble at first. I have really been leaning into comfort reads, and we'll get into that in the next
book. This is the episode for you, Erica.
Well, it is, except at the beginning of this book, it was less comforty than I was sort of hoping, I guess. I really appreciated the way that she starts the book. The writer, I mean, not the character, T. Kingfisher, also known as Ursula Vernon. So she starts the book with Mara already in the midst of her second quest. Her first quest was to make a cloak or something like that. And her second quest is to make a dog. And so she's in the middle of this quest and we don't quite know why she's doing it. But we sort of quickly learn the reason she's doing it is because there's an awful prince who's doing awful things. And it's not really clear at first whether it was to her or to somebody she knows and loves. But like, you know, starting off in a really awful hellscape place where she's literally in a pit full of bones, knitting them together with wire and messing up her hands. And there's a lot of pain and there's a lot of cannibals around. And she's talking about domestic abuse. And I was like, oh, wow, this is harder. Yeah, it was a rough start. But I thought it was really, really well done because in addition to being rough, it was like making me want to know why is all this happening? Why is she here? Why is she doing this? And I mean, in the end, I'm always there for a book where a bad dude gets punished. So right? I was on board, but it was a little bit rough sledding to start with. But then it went into like full on comfort read territory with characters that were older women and we weren't getting their bodies described left, right and center like happens in so many fantasy books. And they were just like so cool. I love these characters so much.
Yeah.
Even the dog. And I'm not a real big dog person, but like even the bone dog.
I love the
one godmother character. I kept picturing her as one of the godmothers from Sleeping Beauty.
Same. Yep.
Make it pink.
Yep, absolutely.
Right. Like, yes. And you're right. If I have a complaint about this book at all, it is that I think that the flashback structure that happens at the beginning and then is completely discarded is unnecessary and kind of confusing. It feels very much like, well, let's get to this exciting part and then we'll flash you back and then we'll catch up and then we'll just go forward. And I'm not sure it was necessary, but
I liked it because it went back and forth enough times to make it feel like if it had just been that once, then no. But it, like, the first several chapters are all back and forth, back and forth.
Right.
And
until it gives up.
Yeah. But I felt like it gave up. Like, it was kind of it took the parts that were hard for me to read and it interspersed them with parts that were less hard to read and kept doing that enough so that I wasn't having trouble the whole way through. I felt like it was like it balanced the the feels. And I don't think I would have liked the book as much had it been straight through chronological, because I don't think that it would have given me the same emotional journey.
That's probably why
I can see that.
She did it that way. Mm. Kelly, what do you think?
The Blistered Lands was a slog. Like, I mean, my fingers weren't bleeding at the end of it, but it was hard. And I did appreciate the getting to go back and forth. It felt a couple of times like the jump between was a very, very hard left. And so it was kind of rough to keep up with. But the rest of the time, I really liked it. And that was one of the things I liked about this to start. And I had the same experience as Erica. Like, I kind of, like, this is not the book I was expecting to read when I picked this up. And then it kept sort of proving itself. And then we got a little cozier after we've caught up on all the backstory. And I also appreciated the characters. Like, we have a character without a name. We have a dog who, like, can't bark. And we have a chicken. And all of them have just as much personality as any other character in the book. Like, they had more character development and went on more interesting journeys than much larger characters in other books I've read. And, you know, it was a dog and it was a chicken and fun little Agnes, who's just this sort of really chipper agent of chaos that kind of shows up and just sort of sprinkles mayhem wherever she goes, and it was pretty great. And
I can't believe I didn't mention the chickens. Thank you. The chickens, very key part of this book. Chickens.
We get a chicken,
not
and
just
then,
one,
and then another sequel. There's a sequel of chickens. Yes, and they were super fun. I also did chuckle to myself because the chick's name is Finder, and that made me that just made me laugh, warm my nerdy little heart.
Mac nerds perfect. Get it.
Yes, I was like, oh, that was, I there was a split second when she said, I named him, you know, I named the chicken Finder, that I, like, did you mean to do that? You know, like, did you know that there's going to be some mech nerd out there somewhere who went, oh, hey, I see what you did there, you know? I just thought it was funny. And, but I really enjoyed it, and I liked the journey that everybody went on, and I liked how, even though for Mara, it was very high stakes, like, as a story, it was sort of low stakes. And so that was really nice. Like, we get to meet some interesting people, and we go to some interesting places, and we find out that some people in this place have some very interesting abilities. And I want to read another book set in this same place and find out more about where the other characters are from, or, you know, what anybody was doing while this was happening in the Northern Kingdom, like, what's up in the Southern Kingdom or whatever. And it was a lot of fun to read for that reason. I mean, one of the main characters in the book doesn't even have a name. She's just the Dust Wife.
Yeah. Lynn, what did you think of this one?
I loved it. I think I suggested it for book club a couple of times.
Mm-hmm.
But it had been published, like, a while ago, like, obviously near enough that it could be nominated for Nebula this year, but I like it because it's now one of my cozy go-to reads, because it's just, like Kelly said, it's kind of a small stakes story, especially when you're reading it, like, the second time, you know enough that you don't kind of get bogged down in the really depressing parts, and you can kind of focus on the relationships between the people and how they interact with each other and their character development. And it just made me feel good. Like, sometimes we read books that are really a slog. and this one was one of the ones that just is just kind of delightful. I mean, people who listen to book club episodes know that I'm a recently converted, like, T. Kingfisher stan. So, like, I loved it. I don't love everything she writes. She does some horror that isn't my jam, but like it, this is just like right in my kind of, I don't know, it says something about me that my cozy comfort reads are also a little bit dark, but I love it. I love Bone Dog. I love the market. The market is so
the goblin market
is so cool. And the currency system of, you know, like it's a barter system, and maybe you pay a tooth and maybe you pay 10 years of your life or your potential life or whatever to get goods and services.
The tooth dancer makes all your teeth dance.
Dancer.
It's, it's not going to be a problem until it happens. And then it's a real problem.
Yeah, and I don't like teeth. Teeth creep me out. I don't know why. Teeth are creepy, but since there wasn't a visual with the bone dancer, I was okay with it. But thinking about it is like, oh man, no, thank you. Okay, without that.
Yeah, there were parts that were that I thought the same. And Aileen, you said you're a recent Teaking Fisher stan. I now just want to go read more because this is the first one I've read, so I'm looking forward to more of
Guide
it.
To Defensive Baking should be on your list, I think.
Yeah,
then that'll be next.
I'll we'll talk later. I've talked about it on book club episodes, so I'll talk to you later about it.
Scott, what do you think of this one?
So I should preface this by saying that I enjoy cozy books, and I, in fact, enjoyed Nettle and Bone. I have read three T. Kingfisher books. I read the Saint of Steel series, which is Paladin's Hope, Paladin's Strength, and Paladin's Grace. Guess what happens in that book? A bunch of people meet. They go on a quest. There's an unlikely romance.
That's true.
And those books are great. I enjoyed them. I enjoyed Nettle and Bone. But when I started Nettle and Bone, I was excited because it starts off radically different than I expected based on those other books. And I thought, oh, this is interesting. Maybe she's trying something different. And I know she's written a lot of books, and her horror books probably are more in that vein of that first chapter, I imagine. I haven't read any of them. And then it just kind of switched to exactly the story that I had read in The Saint of Steel, which I will say again is a good story, full of great characters and lots of good moments. But when I think about why I'm reading this book, which is because it was nominated for a Nebula, it makes me think, well, what does it mean to be nominated for a Nebula, right? And would this be a book that I would expect to be nominated for a Nebula? And I would expect it to be nominated more than I would the other book we read for this book club episode. But I'm still surprised that it was nominated, not because it's bad. I think it's a fun story. It's certainly a comfort read. I can totally understand that. But I don't think it really does anything new or interesting. It is fun and cozy, and there's nothing wrong with that. But I don't think, when I think of an award-winning novel, I think of something that challenges me, does something completely brand new. And I'm not sure this book does that. And also, you know, of course, that's my own bias about what I'm thinking about award nominations, right? So I admit that as well. So there you go. I liked it. I would recommend people read it. I'm just a little confused as to why it was nominated for a Nebula.
I agree with you, Scott, for what it's worth. I enjoyed it a lot. I really did. But I did have that moment of like, this is a nice book. And when Lauren said, "How I guess you finished your book," I'm like, yeah, it was nice. I did not have a superlative to give to it other than that I enjoyed it. And it was a nice thing. It is not anything really new. I love a lot of parts of it. I love there's some of the little details that I really like. I found it pleasant and fun.
Yes.
And there were some twists at the end in terms of what you think the solution to the problem is going to be is not the solution to the problem that I kind of liked, but it was now, I mean, awards are what they are going to be, right? Like you could give an award for anything. And so apparently having a really nice cozy fantasy novel is a thing that at least the Nebula nominees nominators think is a nominatable thing. Cause both of these books are like that.
Sure.
And fair enough. But I share with you that I got to the end and I thought, oh, it was fine. But that's not usually when we do these award shortlist reads, I get to the end and I, even though I don't like the book, I'm like, I understand why this was nominated. And this is sort of like, it's good. It, like, is that enough? I don't know. But I liked it. But yeah, it was also not something that made me rethink the fantasy genre at all. Right. Which it didn't need to. It was nice.
And I will say the scene with the bone dancer is something that I think about fairly often, just because it was so...
The tooth dancer.
It's so dancing crazy. In your mouth. Oh. Very creepy. So I will give her full points for coming up with that and creeping me out. And I keep thinking about it.
The chicken stuff is fun. The bone dog is fun. Mm. I think there are a lot of details that are fun. I think the reason it felt just sort of nice to me is that a lot of it felt very much like... We all know what this story is going to be. We all know where it's going to go. And there were times when it didn't go there, but there are a lot of times where it was sort of like, yeah, that's what makes it cozy. It's like, you know this, right? It's a fantasy story.
And it's written very well. This is a finely written book. Like, I'm not saying she's a bad author. I'm not saying it's poorly written. I think it's a good book. I enjoyed it greatly. And I have a bunch of her other books on my list to read, so I'm a fan of T. Kingfisher. I'm just confused as to why it was nominated for Nebula.
I actually agree with all of that, except for the criteria about what is nominated, because I think about that too when we read, because a lot of the times I don't understand why a book was nominated. You know, typically the ones I rank lower on my list, because it's like, oh, this is just not good. It's too long. It's like, whatever. What do people see in this? Why was it nominated? So I think it's really, really interesting. I don't think anybody is wrong, but I think it's interesting as to what we consider nomination worthy, you know.
It's in the eye of the beholder, really.
Yeah, like,
there's
no
distinction. It's completely subjective.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that a lot of times too, like, you know, some of the books that I think maybe Alina and I have ranked lower in the past have been like, well, why do people nominate this? But I can look at it and I can say, okay, they nominated this because it's really dark in some way, or it has some weird twist, or it's trying something that is not the kind of thing that I am remotely interested in. And I feel like finally the awards are nominating books that I'm actually have a much better chance of enjoying reading. And I think that I all along would be, if I was, obviously I can nominate for the Hugos, but not for the Nebulas. I always have nominated the books that I have enjoyed the most, that have hit me in the right spot. I'm sure there are cozy books out there that are mediocre. Luckily enough, I have been able to miss most of those. I certainly will be adding more T. Kingfisher books to my reading list, because if this is similar to other stuff that she does, I am 100% here for it, because
Scott's
I feel like...
You.
Yeah.
And they're just delightful, to be clear.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And I think that, like, it sort of reminds me of, like, the Oscars. It's like, it is way harder to get a comedy nominated for an Oscar than it is, you know, throw in a couple of scenes with somebody breaking down and crying or murdering somebody else, and suddenly you got yourself Oscar bait.
Right.
Whereas I feel like the difficulty level for comedy when it comes to awards is way higher. And this sort of feels like that as well, like a cozy comfort read. There's a spectrum of what a well-written one that does some things that you don't expect, to, you know, one that's doing all the things that you expect and is not very well written. So I feel like I am pleased that the world of award nominators is turning toward looking at the cozy ones and saying, okay, what are the good cozy ones? We should be putting those on our list. And I think that that's very valid, and I salute all of those nominators.
I see what you're saying, I guess, and it's totally valid, because again, this is completely subjective about, like, why would you nominate something for an award? I will say that I found something like The Goblin Emperor to provoke similar feelings in me, in terms of, I just love that book, and I know that there's, like, you know, there's intrigue and stuff, but in the end, I just think it is a wonderful, warm, fuzzy, I love it so much.
Mm-hmm.
I got to the end of the Goblin Emperor and I said, wow, this is the best thing I've read this year. I'm going to tell everybody about it. I hope it wins lots of awards. And I got to the end of Nettle and Bone and I was like, oh, that was nice. And so for me, there was some difference between those two things. Mm-hmm. But there's nothing wrong in nominating a book because you loved it, no matter what it is, right? But I do, I share Scott's feeling that I got to the end of this one and I was like, okay. Like, it was a good book. I don't know if I'm going to remember it in 6 months, but I enjoyed it. It was a fun read. And you know what? Awards be damned. And I know they tell us what to read here this time of year, but awards be damned.
And we listen.
If a book is a fun read, it's done its job. It's done its job.
Oh, yeah.
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 That's it.
It is very good. Don't get me wrong. I want to be clear again. Yeah, no. This book is very good.
I agree. It's just it's interesting to talk about like the perplexing thing of having that feeling of like, I like this book. I'm a little surprised that it was on this exalted short list of novels, but that doesn't mean I didn't like it. It's just sort of like, oh, okay. I guess this was nominated too. But it is a good book. I like it. Does what it says on the box. It is a fun story in a fantasy genre that does some things that are unique, and it also is just kind of like enjoyable to read. It's written by a writer who has a very good prose style. It is an easy read. It takes some twists that are good, and it's smart with what it does. Really, like, if this sounds good, you should read it. And other stuff by T. Kingfisher, apparently.
That's right.
It's good stuff. It is.
And
bottom line,
and even if it doesn't sound good, you should probably read it because you will like it.
You will not be able to resist it.
Although I will caution people, I think that as Erica said, like the first chapter, you have to get past the first chapter because that is very different tonally than the rest of the book.
Yeah, it is.
I still think that was an editorial conversation to pull forward some dark and weird and dramatic things to the beginning of the book, so that people would be hooked in, because I think the story is otherwise maybe seems a little too standard if it's just about the sister and her sisters, instead of it being like, whoa, wait, she makes a dog out of bones and wire and it comes alive. What? And then, you know, it's a good hook.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it also like it, the creation of the mystery is something that I'm kind of a sucker for that sort of structuring. I really like starting in media ray and then just like going backward and discovering why are we doing this? Like that is just something that really works for me. So I appreciate it. It probably would have felt more pat and standard fantasy, you know, fetch quest if they would have just started at the beginning and gone through her life, and I don't think that would have been as good a book. I feel like that book I would not have nominated for an award. This book I would.
And chapter one is like, no, this has got edges, don't run away, we got edges. It's a little edgy, don't worry about it. And
or
it does deliver.
It's all edges, run away.
Well, that's the danger.
You don't know what's coming.
You gotta make sure you get it there.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Let's move on to another. So it was Nettle and Bone and Legends and Lattes.
Ampersand.
That's a lot of ampersands.
There's a lot of ampersands going on today.
Half off at the punctuation store.
Travis Baldry wrote Legends and Lattes. It is a story about an orc who is a warrior in, let's just say it, a D&D party.
For sure.
And she gets, at the end of the big boss battle, which is the prologue of the book, gets a magic item. And this is her last big score. And she's going to now retire from the adventuring game and start a business. And so she goes to a city. And she decides she is going to open a cafe. Now, most of the world doesn't know about coffee. It's a delicacy that she's found in Gnomish territory, in a Gnomish city. But she's going to import it and she's going to popularize it. And by golly, she's going to make a cafe and she's going to import cafe and coffee culture to the rest of the world, starting with her little cafe. And the story is, and I am not, you may be listening to this and going like, well, yeah, but then what? And the answer is, you know, yes, there are some threats. There are some dangers from local, like local mobsters and things. But the fact is, honestly, you will find nothing more thrilling than the moment where she finds a baker to make baked goods at her cafe.
Yeah, what do you frankly. Mean? And like, I get we have a lot of ampersands here, but what do you mean? And like, you can stop there and it's fine. Yeah,
it is. What I wanted to say is, you might be saying, how could this be a story if all it is an orc sets up a cafe? And I could tell you that, yes, there is a mysterious underworld figure and there's a shadowy figure that might be one of the her past party members who might be sort of up to no good and might resent her from taking the magic item. And that is part of the plot. But what I'm saying is, although that's part of the plot, it is just as riveting to me. And maybe I'm not everybody's going to be wired up this way, but I am excited about the fact that she has to get real estate, that she has to renovate her place, uh-huh. that she has to find a baker, uh-huh. that she has to import an espresso machine from the gnomes, mm-hmm. and that like she has to figure out a marketing plan and hire a coworker. And that is just as important to the story as the fact that there is like an underworld figure and a shadowy figure that might be after her stuff. And that is actually why I loved Legends and Lattes, is because I had that moment where I asked myself, am I really getting excited about the fact that she's found a baker? And the answer is yes, I am.
Absolutely. Actually, kind of, she's so cute. Oh my God.
Everything about this book is just, it's so ridiculously good in a way that I was not expecting. And it's like, honestly, it reminded me, this book, referring back to previous book club episodes, this book felt to me like a mashup of my favorite parts of Project Hail Mary, married to my favorite parts of The Galaxy and The Ground Within. It had that sort of like, the stakes are low because it's a coffee shop, but like, I don't feel like high stakes necessarily makes a better book necessarily. It's how important the stakes feel to you.
Right.
And
well, the stakes are high for our main character because she's taken her entire life savings and has this is her way out of the adventuring game. And if her coffee shop burns down, then she's going to be in real trouble. And so like the stakes, personal stakes are high, but they are high in a way that is not like your usual epic fantasy stakes. It's just, it's very personal.
So like Project Hail Mary, which we talked about in a previous book club episode, like the stakes are literally like worlds are going to live or die based on what this main character does. So stakes are very different. But in Project Hail Mary, it's very much problem solving the book, I think, is what I called it before. It's like, here's a task. We need to figure out how to I need to figure out how to fix it. Move on to the next task. And that's what this was, except that the tasks were, as you said, finding a baker, learning how to make these different kinds of coffee, learning how to redesign a building, finding a person who is good enough at woodworking and who has the temperament to be the kind of person who will work with you and for you. And like just all of the step-by-step stuff, I was as on the edge of my seat as you were, Jason. I wanted to know, you know, opening a business, the book, except that it's in D&D land and has just amazing characters. I will let somebody else talk about the characters, but I was in love with each one of these characters. They all felt like people to me that I just wanted to go and hang out with. Everything about this book just made me so happy.
It made me hungry. I mean,
that too.
Two pages of cinnamon rolls, and I was like, that's just unfair. Like, I haven't eaten dinner yet.
In a world that has not tasted cinnamon rolls, apparently. That's the
thing. Can you imagine?
That was another thing that was also, like, really entertaining to me was getting, you know, we're going to open a coffee shop. And, you know, we're going to sell coffee. And then we're going to sell lattes and cinnamon rolls. And, you know, and everyone there is sort of convinced that this is witchcraft, which sounds like a more legitimate explanation than anything they've heard from anybody else.
They find a little rat man who is the world's greatest baker. And it's just a great detail of like, oh, this, the small rat man is a genius.
Odd little alchemist with whiskers who's like in the back with flour and cardamom making magic. And it was great because like I've had biscotti that was really good and I've had cinnamon rolls were really good and all that. And it was so it was fun to watch people
it's
be introduced to this whole thing.
But it's biscotti. It's totally biscotti.
I'm sorry. Thimblets are delightful. And it was really it was fun to watch, you know, something that to me is a very known quantity, this particular format of caffeine and some treats and stuff. And then watching that sort of get turned loose on this place with magic and ley lines and all these other things, you know, and then one of the people who works there is a succubus and like all of the, you know, and everybody's sort of suspicious of coffee, which I just thought was kind of entertaining.
It's
shifty. And it was really fun to, and it was really entertaining. And, you know, like you said, like the stakes are very important to Viv. The stakes are very important to Tendri. Like, you know, it super, super matters to them what happens. So now it super, super matters to me that it's okay.
And Viv, as the retired adventurer, they hang her sword on the wall and that becomes almost like a temptation, right? Which is like, you could pick up the sword again. And one of the things she's trying to do is not pick up the sword again, even though she's like, I want to deal with my problems in a way that is not the way that an adventurer deals with the problems, which I liked the idea that she's like trying to leave her life behind because she lives in a world where like that is the solution to a lot of problems is pick up your sword. You're a big orc lady, you will be able to chop people up with your sword. And she's like, I am done with that. I don't want to do that anymore. And that increases the tension, right? Because she's like, I'm trying to find another path that will get me where I need to be. And there's a beautiful moment in the book where something bad happens to her business. And it's a beautiful moment because we sort of see it as readers, right? Like, she thinks that it's over, that she can't recover from this. But we've seen her build friendships and relationships throughout the book up to that point. And so there, in that moment where she's at her lowest, everybody that she's dealt with up to now comes to help her. And it's a beautiful, beautiful moment that I think is earned. And it's just such a way of doing it, a great way of doing it, of saying like in this moment where she doesn't have any moves left, she's sort of like out of ideas. The answer is that she has been spending so much time treating people well that they are happy to help her out in her moment of need. And it surprises her, which is also, I mean, how many times, I don't know about the rest of you, I have seen so many people who have been on hard times and are shocked that their friends want to help them. And it's like, yeah, that's what friends do, but the person being helped doesn't understand and is kind of like, can't believe that it's happening. And that happens, and it's a beautiful moment too.
So beautiful.
Aline, what did you think of this one?
So,
wow, there's the wind up.
I know.
Pitch.
I like it.
Scott is laughing like, yes.
I'm not the villain.
I think it's a good book. I had two issues going in now that you all have talked it up. And I think one of them is actually that I heard so many people and so many incomparable members, especially talking about what an awesome book it was. Mm-hmm. And so it was like super hyped for me. And y'all know me, I'm kind of audiobooks first for this kind of thing. So I listened to the audiobook. I tried to listen to the audiobook. So it's read by the author who is
apparently as an audiobook reader.
Yep. Member of SAG-AFTRA, like professional narrator. And it's like all I hear about it is like it's this cozy, delightful book that's just like slipping into a warm bath to read. And he reads it like everything is an action sequence.
Oh, no.
And I was so tense listening to talk about her like meandering through the streets looking for ley lines, and I was like, or describing cinnamon rolls. I had to give up on the audiobook. He is awesome. He's so good, but tonally it just did not match what I felt like it needed to be. So I eyeball read it, and it was better at that point. But I don't know if like that just kind of made it too hard for me to dive in with both feet or what, because I liked it. I liked it, but I never felt the pull to come back to it. It was like, oh yeah, this is a nice read. It's, you know, it's not stressing me out. It's a lovely little story about, you know, friendship and cinnamon rolls. And it
ampersand
was great.
Cinnamon rolls, yeah.
Ampersand cinnamon rolls.
Friendship, ampersand cinnamon rolls. But I never like felt like I had to know what was going to happen next. And so I don't know. Like, I don't think this goes in my cozy will reread pile. It's like, yeah, I'm glad I read it once, but now it's over, and it was okay. It was good. So yeah, I don't know. I just struggled with it. But on the other hand, it does resonate with me a little bit because, spoilers for Curse of Strahd on TPK, but like, we're at a point where we're nearing the end of the adventure, and we keep talking about doing like SimCity Barovia, like the after. Yep. we beat the big bad, and like, we're gonna make Tony show up in DM so that we can like rebuild this nation that's been under oppression for hundreds of years. Like, so it kind of resonated with me with that as we're winding down this adventure on Total Party Kill, because it's like, you kind of want to know what happens after, and it's kind of nice to get that. So I appreciate it from that. But this is where I pull Scott's line, where I'm like, would I have nominated it for Nebula? No, probably not. Like, is it award worthy? Not to me, so I don't know. That's
nice.
That's where I am. Yeah, it's a good book.
I don't know about award. Like, I don't know about nominating it for an award or anything like that, because I don't generally sit down and read all of the things that are nominated or anything like that. I do read a lot, but as soon as I finished this book, I found out that the next one was coming out later this year, and I went and ordered it because I want to spend more time here. I thought it was a fun place to be, and so I thought it was a lot of fun. Maybe it's not award material, but a lot of things that are fun and entertaining and kind of low stakes aren't necessarily
and it doesn't,
you know, held up in that way. You know, yeah, what I mean? So like, it can be fun and doesn't have to be held up as the pinnacle of craft or anything like that.
But I found out that the sequel is coming out later this year, and I thought, oh, good for the people who love it. Like, I just didn't feel like I needed to read the next one. Wow.
Well, shout out to Sarah Bickerton, who was the person who recommended this. And I went, well, if Sarah's that excited about it, obviously I have to read it. And so I was very much not sorry. So thanks, Sarah.
Hey, Scott, you're not the villain. Congratulations. What did you think of this one?
Finally, a book club where I am not the villain. Well, I think that I will say that it is a perfectly pleasant book, competently written. It is, so, you know, it is unfair to judge all books as if they are award nominated and should be the pinnacle of their craft, unless, in fact, it's within the context of talking about all the award nominated books.
That's true.
And so with that context, my thinking about this book is harsher than it would be if I had just read it by itself, right? Because I am reading it not as just a book that is fun, but as a book that was nominated for a Nebula. And in my mind, that means that it is of the year, it is kind of one of the milestones of fantasy or science fiction. And do I think, and once again, subjective, of course, so that's my thinking of what makes a Nebula nominee. And does this book meet that criteria for me? The answer is no. Does that mean that this book is bad? No, I had a lot of fun with it. One of my favorite things is thinking about, you know, the mundane things in a D&D campaign, like the I had a D&D character many years ago who was, you know, a blind archer who happened to be an evil elf as well. So he took all of the platinum bars from the party treasure when no one was looking. And then he bought a castle, and I had people, an army, and, you know, I invited my party members, and he tried to poison them. It was fun. Like, these are the things I enjoy. So I enjoyed, it's kind of the exact opposite of this book, really. Instead of having a nice cafe, my character built a murder castle, but it's a similar thrust, right? And so I really enjoyed the book, but as I was reading it, I was like, this is nominated for a Nebula. It does not compute. That being said, I think if people like, you know, cozy, nice books where nice things happen after some obstacles and friendships are built and everyone has a nice cup of coffee at the end, you should read this book.
Yeah, I see what you're saying, Scott. I'm going to only personally, I'm going to disagree in the sense that I read this book and I thought, okay, I see why this was nominated, because in the, like, it's really good at what it does. And so I can see it. It again, I look at a book like this and I think, okay, The Goblin Emperor, again, is the kind of book that I would say engendered a lot of the same feelings in me, but also I was like, this is one of the best books of the year. I don't know if I can say that about Legends and Lattes, but I did feel like it was, because I, like Aline, I got overhyped on this book. And I was like, oh boy, I got to read this book. We're going to do a book club on it. I got to read it. And I read it and I was like, pleasantly surprised, because I went in dreading the fact that I there's no way it could live up to the hype. And I was like, you know, it lives up to the hype. I really did enjoy it a lot. And I thought it was very, very nice. And so I put it a level above Nettle and Bone. I think it is a really good example of a kind of book that I don't read a lot of. I don't know if there are a lot of them out there and I'm not reading them, or if there just aren't a lot of them, but like, I thought it was very well done and smart and knowing about the tropes, and it didn't take itself too seriously. And so this one, I can see it a little bit better than Nettle and Bone in terms of why it got nominated for a Nebula Award. It's not edgy or groundbreaking, but like, I think it is a pretty good exemplar of this kind of book. I think it did a surprisingly good, competent, capable job of getting it across the finish line in a way that I honestly didn't expect going in. So that would be my, I guess I can see it a little better than maybe you can with this one, because I was like, okay, you, like, I know why people love this book. I get it. And and that sheer love can be enough to carry something into a nomination process. I get it.
I totally understand why people love it. Would I you don't consider understand it? Why that love would make you nominated for a Nebula, though.
Yeah, well, because you're just out of your mind with love, Scott. The heart doesn't know.
You do crazy
logic.
Things when you're in love.
I did not nominate it for a Nebula, but I did put it on my Hugo nominations ballot. And I mean, I will admit that I don't read as much or as widely as a lot of people. So my pool of books that I read over the year that I was looking at was probably smaller than it is for some people. But this book was very much like at a level where I was like, absolutely, the trick that this book was doing did it so well. It was so well written. Yeah. And you know, right now I feel like at this point in the world, I think bringing comfort is a thing that is more important to me than trying something new or different. And I mean, I do think that trying something new or different is important, an important thing to take into account, but it's slightly less important unless it actually nails it. Whereas some years in the past, I probably would have thought of, oh, you know, a big swing that's a miss is going to rate higher than, you know, something like this. But right now, no, I think that this serves such a valuable purpose that, yeah. And I also, I want to echo something that Jason said. Maybe there are a lot more books like this out there that are this good, that are sort of doing this thing. And if so, point me towards them.
Somebody tell us.
Yeah. Yes, please. I too would like to know.
Right?
Because I have not come across anything that sort of felt remotely like this. It was, you know, except for, you know, there's possibly some D&D fanfic out there that I should also be reading. Point me to that too. But yeah, the way that it took the sort of D&D tropes and knowingly used them, but then also, I don't know, made them feel more like characters than you get in some D&D type material. I really liked how all of the people felt like people. And I honestly, like, yes, there's a romance in here, but I kind of almost didn't even see it coming because I was so focused on the rest of the story and the how-to step-by-step process of it that I just, this totally went on my list.
There is a romance here. It felt unnecessary to me. It's nice. I always feel like, oh, we put two characters together and they're working closely together and they fall in love. I'm like, I don't know. That's so easy. Like, you don't, they don't always fall in love. They can just be really great friends. And this book's like, no, they fall in love. And I'm like, okay, it's great. It's fine. It's not really necessary, but it's fine. It's, I don't mind it. I just, does everybody who works with everybody else fall in love with them? And that doesn't happen, but okay. All right, cozy book. Fine. You win.
I don't know. I dated a lot of people I worked with.
I spent the entire book like doing the will they, won't they. Do I want them to? Do I not want them to? And I think it was well done, but like Jason, I don't think it was necessary.
Ooh. Erica and I were both in a D&D campaign where we spent an unusual amount of time talking about a sandwich shop that was run by a bugbear and a bunch of kobolds. And so I had that moment where I'm like, you know, is that where Travis Baldry got this? Is they were ripping in a D&D session about how I'm going to start a coffee shop when I'm done. And if so, that's fine. It's fine.
I'm almost certain that that's where this
came
from.
Yeah, it feels like it.
One thing I really enjoyed about this was because the coffee shop feels like a place I want to go. Like, I think it would be really fun to hang out in a place with a sword on the wall. And I'm convinced that under the sword, they have one of those signs. You know, it has been 5 days since I solved a problem with this sword.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm convinced it's there.
Cuts down on the shoplifting too.
You know, that's probably a good reason to have it in a place of prominence on the wall. And I also just like, you know, at the bottom of the menu, it says finer tastes for the working gent and lady. And I just thought that like all of the little stuff like that was stuff that can be unnecessary when you don't have time to do the world building and add those little touches because you have so much ground to cover with the story that you're trying to tell. And so I really liked having the moments for, you know, here's the revised version of the menu that you can see and all
thrill
that kind of stuff.
At the excitement of doing chalk on a chalkboard in order to promote your establishment. And yet
I did not do the audio for this, so it was just fun to watch it sort of, you know, scroll by as I was reading. So it was pleasant.
I will say the thought of a little wrap making pastries like that just kind of squicks me out. Like,
it's like watching. That's the Ratatouille problem,
It's like watching British Bake Off masterclass episodes where Paul Hollywood is like his hairy arms and he's like making pizza dough and he's stretching it out on his arms and it just, no thank you.
I get it.
Paul Hollywood, 50% rat.
Little Ratatouille problem,
It all makes sense now.
All right. Those are our books. Now we're going to do what are we reading in a second. I'm also going to tell you now, friends, what we're reading next. And the answer is we don't know entirely because the Hugo nominations aren't out yet. So our next book club, we will discuss Nona the Ninth, which is the last of the Nebula nominees that we haven't read yet for podcast, although I read it, by Tamsin Muir, the third book in the Locked Tomb series.
I really hope my library hold comes through in time because I do not want to pay for that book.
I just read it, and it is a book, but that I didn't hate. But I'm going to say that for the next podcast. And then we will communicate with you. So we have a Goodreads. It'll be linked in the show notes. So you can go to theincomparable.com and click on this episode or look in your podcast player. And when we know, we'll put it in the Goodreads. If you're a member, we'll put it in the Discord for members. We'll let you know what we're reading next. It will be Hugo nominees, probably, but we don't know more than that yet. But Nona the Ninth, and to be determined.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Now, we like to do a little thing called, I call it What Are We Reading? And that confused everybody because the present tense makes it seem like we're reading right now and we're not. That's not what it's about. It is a book or two that we have read lately that we would like to recommend to you, our dear listeners, outside of what we read for the book club. And let's start with Scott, not the villain. Scott, what are you reading?
I am not the villain. I have recently read a couple of books. One most recently is short, and it is called The Mimicking of Known Successes by Malka Ann Older. And it is set after the Earth has become uninhabitable. Humans have escaped to colonize parts of Jupiter. None of that is particularly important. There is a murder, and an investigator has to figure out what is going on. And along the way, rekindles her relationship with her college love. Other things happen, and it's only 170 pages. It's delightful. It's kind of a retro futurism vibe going on, and I really enjoyed it. And another book is that I really enjoyed is The Last Remains by Ellie Griffiths, which is completely unlike The Mimicking of Known Successes. It is the final book in the Ruth Galloway series. Hopefully not the final one, because I really like it, but it is the 15th in the series. If you've not read any of the Ruth Galloway series, do not start with the 15th book of the Ruth Galloway series, please. Start with the first book. If you like cozy mysteries with strong characters and romance, you'll enjoy the Ruth Galloway books. I feel like if this is the final book, it was satisfying. It will still make me sad not to read another Ruth Galloway book, but I did think it was a good ending if it has to end.
All right. Thank you, Scott. Very helpful. Not villainous at all. Erica, what are you reading?
I've got a couple. I have spoken before about how much I like Jim C. Hines as an author. I tend to just buy whatever new thing he puts out. I have not gone into his back catalog, but I sort of just did. His the rights to his Princess series of books reverted to him, so he just republished them all himself. So I picked up the ebook versions of The Stepsister Scheme and The Mermaid's Madness, Robin Hood, Red Hood's Revenge, and The Snow Queen's Shadow. I am through the first two, and I enjoyed them. The Stepsister Scheme is in which Danielle, Talia, and Ermelina, aka Cinderella, Sleeping Beauty, and Snow White, set off to rescue the kidnapped prince. It's Cinderella's prince in this case, and I am such a sucker for any kind of fairy tale type thing. I really just enjoyed sort of that take on it. I do think that that Jim C. Hines has progressed a lot as a writer over the last decade and a half since he wrote these books. I think I didn't like these quite as much as his more recent works, which I've already recommended on a book club episodes before. But if you are like me and you are a princess completionist, then yes, do join me in reading these books. They're fast. They're fun. They play with fairy tales, which I always enjoy, although I do want to say content warning for sexual assault. He definitely pulls on some of the older, darker versions of these fairy tales as origin stories for some of the princesses. So, like, if you're familiar with the more disturbing versions of Sleeping Beauty, you will know what I mean. Yes, the Princess books by Jim C. Hines. And then I also read The Red Scholar's Wake by Aliette de Bodard. It is part of her Zuya universe. We've talked a few of her other books in this universe, The Tea Master and The Detective, and On a Red Station Drifting. This book has a very different tone. It's in that universe, but it's very specifically a romance. And it is basically a lesbian romance between a nerdy engineer scavenger who is taken prisoner by pirates. And the person that she has a romance with is the leader of this pirate faction who has taken her prisoner. And that woman also happens to be a sentient spaceship pirate queen. It's ridiculous plot, or not a ridiculous plot, but like the idea of the lesbian space pirates is, you know, like it just made me laugh. And I was like, I must read this book. It also, in addition to the romance, has lots of politicking and intrigue and even some battles and stuff. I have very much discovered that my uber happy reading place right now is romance that happens to be set in a sci-fi fantasy world, as opposed to a science fiction or fantasy novel that happens to have a romance in it. Like both of our main books that we talked about today, I would put in the latter category. They were nice, you know, science fiction fantasy books that had romance in them. This is a romance. It has the romance tropes, all of those sorts of things. And it happens to happen in this existing future space universe where Vietnam and China sort of took over and everything has a more sort of Confucian bent to it. It's a fascinating universe. I really like all of the other books, but this one was a great read if you like romance. So The Red Scholar's Wake by Aliette de Bodard.
Very nice. That's a great universe. Lots of tea in there, as I recall, too. One of those.
Yep. Oh, there's so universes. Much tea in this book, too. Yep. Lots Don't worry. You get your tea.
The little space tea universes. Aline, what are you reading?
I think I have two that I'll talk about. So the first I just finished. It's Dead Silence by S.A. Barnes. It is a sci-fi horror novel. Horror is not one of my preferred genres, but I went with it this time. So... imagine the Titanic plus Sabotage, but in space. Or maybe not Sabotage. I just spoiled it. There's some Sabotage, but you don't know what it is. How's that? But there's this luxury cruise liner that's off for a 1 year expedition, a slow crawl through, I don't know, the solar system, I think. And it's this very opulent ship with gold sinks and famous sculptures. And 6 months into the journey, it just kind of disappears and nobody knows what happens. 20 years later, a ship, a work crew comes across it, enters it because they want the salvage rights, and bad things happen. And so the mystery is, are there ghosts? Is the narrator reliable? Is the narrator just seeing dead people? Like, is it the sixth sense? We don't know. And it was a pretty good read. It got a little bit long in the middle. I think it could have been cut down a little bit. But overall, I thought it was really, really good. And it's probably the last horror book I'll read for like another 5 years. It's got gore. It's got, you know, so not my preferred, but I was glad I read it. And the second book is The Measure by Nikki Ehrlich. And that is a story where one day everybody who is 22 and older wakes up and they have a box on their doorstep. And inside the box is a string. And the string cannot be destroyed like with fire. It can't be cut with scissors. What they discover is that the string is the length of your life. And the story then becomes, and then people who turn 22 in subsequent days and weeks and years get their box on their 22nd birthday. The story is like, what do people do? What do you do with your life when you have a short string versus a long string? Like, what will people do and how will they act? And I thought that it was a really believable look at what might happen if one day we were to be told how long we had left to live. So I thought that the conceit of the book was really interesting. I thought it was well executed. I felt like I related to the characters, and y'all know how important that is to me. So like the characters, I had a couple who I could latch on to, and I enjoyed it. I thought it was an interesting look at something and not a premise we see all the time, kind of in our science fiction and fantasy world.
Nice. Thank you. Kelly.
Yes.
It is our tradition to do what are we reading. Do you have something for us?
I do. Both of mine are from series. This is a series I've reread a couple of times now, and I'm going back through it because I really enjoy the audio versions of them. And it's a series by an author named Patricia Briggs, and she has written a series of books about Mercy Thompson, who's a mechanic who lives in Tri-Cities, Washington, which is my native land. So I couldn't help but be mildly interested in these, but there's sort of a spinoff of those that is based around a couple of characters we casually meet in that series who live in Montana, and that's the Alpha and Omega series by Patricia Briggs, and Cry Wolf is the one that I recommend. It's the first book in the series, and I think the characters are a lot of fun. They're super interesting. This book primarily is about werewolves. This series is about werewolves. It's all sort of present day and all that kind of thing. But there happen to be werewolves, and werewolves are sort of a new revelation to the regular world, or the mundanes, as they call some people call them. And it's really fun to read. I enjoyed the other series. Part of why I started reading it is because, like I said, it's set where I grew up, and hearing them talk about going to all these places that I actually have been there and know what they look like is always a trip when I'm reading books. The next book I want to suggest is accidentally local, because I didn't know they were set in Ashland when I bought the book. I stopped at a bookshop on the Oregon coast, and I was just sort of browsing the shelf, and they said, this author was just here and signed a stack of books. And so I picked up a couple of them, and they are from a series called A Bake Shop Mystery by Ellie Alexander. And the main character of the book, I just started it, so I don't even have an opinion of it yet, but it's been fun so far. The main character's name is Juliet, and she runs a bakery in Ashland, Oregon. So like I said, it's accidentally local. And all of the books have these really, to me anyway, entertaining titles, like Another One Bites the Crust and Live and Let Pie. And the one that I'm reading is Till Death Do Us Tart. And I also got Mocha, She Wrote, which made me laugh, and so that's why I bought them. And so far, they've been really fun. And so we'll see if they continue.
All right. Thank you very much. For me, it is... I'm just going to make one recommendation. I just finished that book that we're going to cover next time, and it took forever. So I have one recommendation. It is A Conjuring of Light by V.E. Schwab. This is
so
book
good.
Three in the Shades of Magic series. I've recommended these books before. You should start with the first one, A Darker Shade of Magic. But now the trilogy, I know there's going to be another book in this series, but it does feel like these form a trilogy, and then there might be another trilogy to come. They're really great. It's multiple parallel Londons with different amounts of magic, and there are certain kinds of special magicians who can transfer themselves between the worlds. There is a London that has been taken over by the forces of darkness, and that being or creature or whatever it is now sort of like pouring out and is going to try to take over the magical London that the series is mostly set in. You got a sassy pirate magician. You got a sassy court of the king magician. You got a sassy pirate captain who's not a magician. There's a lot of sassy characters. They're fun. And then there's a terrible, they have to unite, even though they say catty things about each other, to fight the forces of darkness. It's so good. As Aline
said.
What's
the name of the first book?
The first book in the series is called A Darker Shade of Magic. And then A Gathering of Shadows and A Conjuring of Light. And the main characters are what, Kel and Lila? And they're great. Like, Kel is his brother. He's the adopted brother of the crown prince of this kingdom, who the king and queen sort of look down upon, but he's truly loyal to his brother. And in these books, puts his life on the line in more ways than one for his brother. And then Lila is a rando from a place that doesn't have magic who actually does have magic. And when she finally comes to the magic fantasy world, she decides, I'm going to be a pirate. And it goes from there. So it is, very exciting, fun. The magic is interesting. The worlds are all different in interesting ways. The characters are great. It is one of the better series that I've read in recent years. So definitely recommend B.E. Schwab's Shades of Magic. Conjuring of Light I just read, but Darker Shade of Magic is where you should start.
Well, I could tell you that on Kobo, they have all three of them bundled together.
Bundled together!
And bought them.
Erica, that's because there's this next book or new trilogy beginning, and so they want people to get caught up.
Ooh.
But you won't be sorry. Well, they're great.
Well, since you put it that way.
I gave all three of them 5 stars.
Yeah, they're really good.
Like, wow. All right.
I think there was another, there's the that fantasy trilogy that Dan Morin turned me on to, that now I can't remember what it is.
Is it the City of Stairs one?
Yeah, City of Stairs.
I kind of bailed out in the middle of that one.
I prefer that trilogy to this.
Interesting.
But honestly, they're both great. They're both
okay.
That brings us to the end of this book club. And so we'll move on and read one book has been assigned, others yet to be assigned. Come on, Hugo nominees. The Hugo, the World Science Fiction Convention's in China this year. So there's some mystery, the compilation of the nominees is happening, but like the Hugo Awards website, which is done by volunteers, is like, I don't know, we'll see what they say. So when we do that, we'll make some decisions and assign them. But we'll be back here in a month or two to talk about more books. But until then, let me thank my panelists. Celine Sims, thank you for being here again.
Thank you, Ampersand. Good night.
Eric Ampersand, Eric Ann, thank you.
I would like to point out that looking at the covers, at least on Goodreads, Legends and Lattes uses the ampersand that looks kind of like a treble clef, you know, the one that's on your keyboard. But Nettle and Bone uses the old-fashioned one that looks like an E with a flourish. Mm. So I just want to say we've covered the gamut.
A little typography nerdiness there. Kelly Gamont, thanks for being on the book club for a first time. It was great having you.
Thanks for having me, Ampersand. It was really fun to be here. And if I can get around to reading more things that have recently been released, I will come back again.
Awesome. Woo. And Scott McNulty, not the villain.
It is as shocking to me as it is to the listeners.
The twist.
It's always good having you here, Scott, because you read all the books. Tell us what to do and what to read. Thanks, everybody out there, for listening to this episode of The Incomparable and The Book Club. We will see you next time